Welcome to the Medical Journal of Australia podcast. The MJA is Australia's top peer-reviewed general medical journal, publishing groundbreaking research to the medical community since 1914. My name is Kate Swanell, and I am the MJA's news and online editor. When a man is diagnosed with low-risk prostate cancer, that is, with a Gleason score no worse than 7, he is usually put on active surveillance, a protocol involving at least 3 PSA tests and at least 1 biopsy in the 2 years following diagnosis. It's a protocol designed to detect if the disease is progressing to the stage where treatment is required. But according to new research led by Monash University in Melbourne, almost 3/4 of Victorian men on active surveillance did not have follow-up investigations consistent with that protocol. Associate Professor Sue Evans, who is Director of the Clinical Registry Unit at Monash University, and Melanie Evans, Coordinator of the Prostate Cancer Outcome Registry of Victoria, are my special guests on the pod today. Perhaps we'd better define some terms. What is the definition of low-risk prostate cancer?
So these are men who present at diagnosis with a low PSA level of less than 10, a Gleason score of low risk is less than or equal to 6, and a clinical T of 2A or less. But men who go on to active surveillance can also go on to active surveillance if they have favourable intermediate risk disease,
okay,
which would be a 3+4 on their Gleason.
I guess we'd better define what active surveillance is in terms of, what's the active part of it.
What active surveillance actually is that men will be actively monitored. So they'll have PSAs taken on a regular basis, yeah, and they are likely to have a biopsy within sort of 1 to 2 years after that initial diagnosis,
yeah,
whether there's been any progression of their prostate cancer.
Let's talk a little bit about the research, which is being published on the 28th of May. How did you go about getting your information?
So these men were diagnosed after 2008, had the Prostate Cancer Outcome Registry Victoria operating since then, and we collect details on men diagnosed in recruiting hospitals and follow them up, usually just to their initial treatment, but for men on active surveillance, we follow them up annually just to check on, you know, whether they progressed to treatment. And we collect these details from the medical records in the consulting rooms in private practice, mm-hmm, and in hospitals in public practice.
So how many participants did you end up being able to use the data for?
So we had 1,635 men eligible, and this follows a recruitment path where if men transitioned into active treatment in the 2 years that we followed them up, they were excluded from the analysis. So this cohort of 1,635 men were those who stayed on active surveillance for a two-year period and were diagnosed after 2008,
yes,
and up until December of 2014, so
right,
that the 2 years to December 2016 for their follow-up.
What were you hoping to find and what did you end up finding?
We went into it not really understanding what adherence looked like in this cohort of men. Anecdotally, some of our data collectors were coming back and saying that they felt that men were falling through the cracks and that, you know, they were going into medical records and didn't seem to see a lot of follow-up. So that sort of was the first trigger for us in the early stages that we needed to follow these men more actively to understand their active surveillance path. So we had a suspicion that there might have been some gaps in service provision, but the hypothesis was then to be tested.
And what did you find?
So we found that 26% of men adhered to the protocol of having 3 PSA levels and 1 repeat biopsy in a 2-year period after diagnosis. 38% didn't have a repeat biopsy in the 2 years. 63% didn't have the full 3 PSA levels in that 2-year period.
That sounds to me, as a layperson, that 3/4 of the guys being diagnosed with low-risk prostate cancer are not being followed up properly.
That's correct.
Yeah, we were certainly, we were concerned. I think it's also worth noting that there are limitations to the data, and it's important to make that clear. The registry follows up the medical records in the consulting rooms and in the hospitals, but if men were presenting that to their GP and those notes weren't made available into the hospital, which they ought to be doing because, you know, they should have a PSA history when they're seeing these men, then we may have missed those, well, we would have missed those PSA levels. And it may also be for a small percentage of men that whilst it was recorded as them being on active surveillance, they may well have been on watchful waiting. And there is a distinction between active surveillance and watchful waiting. We don't think it occurred on many because there are only 5% that had no PSA levels, which suggests that those 5% were probably recorded in the medical record as having active surveillance, but in fact they were intended to have watchful waiting.
Even so, in spite of those limitations, it's a worrying number, isn't it?
Yes, it certainly, you know, needs further investigation to understand why that might be, what's causing it. Are there health service related factors? We did know that men were significantly less likely to get active surveillance follow-up according to the protocol if they were diagnosed in and managed in a public hospital. Private hospitals were significantly more likely to have good adherence rates, 83% better than public. So I think that sort of anecdote falling through the cracks is something that we probably need to think a little bit about.
I'm talking today to Sue Evans from Monash University and Melanie Evans from the Prostate Cancer Outcome Registry of Victoria, who are not related, but who are co-authors of research published by the MJA at mja.com.au, where it is available open access. Do we know what the consequences might be in the sense that if low-risk prostate cancer isn't monitored properly, do we know how many of them go through to being dangerous?
It's a little unclear. Certainly, if they're not followed up in the longer term, then they may well progress. And we do know that if they progress, they're significantly more likely to have to require additional treatment. If they progress past curative intent, then they will need to have radiotherapy. But a lot of the larger studies haven't shown a mortality impact. So in terms of, you know, will it lead to an earlier death, there's not a lot of evidence to show that either. But it does mean that down the track, if they're not monitored, the impact on them having to have more treatment is likely. You know, the impact on mortality will be quite some way downstream.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're not looking at a one-year impact. It's likely to be more a 10-year impact. If people are not getting followed up, you know, properly, then we'll need to watch this space, but watch for some time to actually understand that. We do, you're absolutely right that there's, you know, overdiagnosis. There are a lot of men that are getting diagnosed with low risk indolent disease that will never cause their death. And so, you know, that's why I suppose the impact on mortality is less clear. The impact on additional treatment is more clear. But if we are diagnosing men with low risk disease, then it really is incumbent on us to make sure that if they're not going to have active treatment, that we are at least, you know, monitoring them so that if it progresses, it can be acted upon. And I think increasingly there's, you know, recognition that people with low-risk disease don't get active treatment.
We're
seeing a huge increase in active surveillance uptake. But, you know, what is concerning is that if men are being promoted into active surveillance, which is completely appropriate, that they are being monitored appropriately.
What's your gut feeling about why these men are dropping through the cracks? What do you think's going on?
I think there's probably a multifaceted problem, probably problems in lots of different areas. So I think men are probably not aware enough of what they should be doing when they're on active surveillance, possibly. It might, and I think there's also health, particularly in the public system, there is that problem of men falling through the crack. There's probably a few different reasons why it's happening.
I think there's also, you know, there's been an increase in MRIs being used. While the guidelines don't state that MRIs should replace biopsies. It may also be that men and urologists are opting for MRIs as a surveillance path rather than biopsies, because men don't want to have repeat biopsies. They're obviously not nice to have. So we don't know the extent to which these men are having MRIs. Mm-hmm. But having said that, MRIs are not within any of the guidelines recommended to replace biopsies in the surveillance, because they do miss quite a bit as well. I think what was interesting was that men who had transperineal biopsies were less likely to adhere to a follow-up schedule. And we don't know why that is. We're actually doing some qualitative research at the moment to understand that a little bit more. I think what we've seen in our qualitative interviews is that some men are perhaps not able to access the subsequent PSA levels within the 12-month period because of some confusion around the Medicare rebate items. I think GPs are putting a different Medicare item number to PSA levels on men who haven't been diagnosed, which will restrict them to one a year. And once men have got a diagnosis, then they can have many more PSA levels. So, right. You know, there may be something in that as well. But all of these things at the moment are really just kind of explorative, and we, you know, we'll need to sort of look into it a little bit more detail.
Do you have any future research planned on this?
Well, the qual work we're doing at the moment, mm-hmm. and that will inform some further quant data collection that will look at some of these other factors that we think might impact the low adherence.
If you had a magic wand, what would you change right now that would improve this situation?
Gosh, that's not an easy one. I think that there are tools that we can think about implementing for patients to help them keep a track on their PSA levels. And that's another thing that we're sort of just exploring as well, a tracker, so that men can understand, you know, how they are going and when they should be looking to, transition mm-hmm. off active surveillance. I think that the guidelines at the moment are jumbled across European, American and Asian countries, and so there's a lot of work that's been happening to try and get a single guideline, and I think that will kind of hopefully reduce some of the confusion around active surveillance, which happens in general practice and in hospitals. So I think health services, obviously, if we can somehow improve systems so that men are, you know, getting notification of appointments and there is a better follow-up of those that don't, I think that would obviously go some way towards helping as well. So it's got to be multifaceted, you know, impact the patient, the health service and the urologist, and those three suggestions would go some way towards hopefully, you know, remedying the current situation.
Thanks very much, both of you.
All right. Thanks so much.
No worries. Thanks so much for your time. My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.